Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side, so raise your glass. I am Adam Minahan, sitting here in North Carolina. First time to be in Hickory, North Carolina. Dave, is it your first time as well?
Yeah.
When's the last time that you were... Have you even been to North Carolina before?
I have not. I've very few times been... I don't even know. This isn't the East Coast, because we're kind of inland, but the east side of the country, I've only visited a few times.
Yeah. So we're here at the conference that we've been trying to promote for the last, how many weeks now? Liturgy of the Land Conference. I don't know. We've been promoting it for the last, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 weeks.
Dude, I have too many kids to keep. I don't like. Don't even remember what I was doing. Too much.
Exactly.
Too much.
Like, I can't even keep kidding.
Like that was an overwhelming question for me.
Yeah. Sorry. That was. I tried. It was actually just supposed to be a softball, and then I realized
it was not. It was not. He's like, that's a panic. I don't know, man. Am I supposed to know?
anyway, so we're here. Our good friend Jason Craig. He is the author of Liturgy of the Land book by Tan Books. Go pick that up. It's a fantastic book.
Yeah, and if you have that book already and you haven't started reading it, you are missing out.
Yes, yep. It's a great book. And Dr. Malosh wrote a blurb for it in the back. If you turn around in the back from the Alcuin Institute mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. Tulsa.
Also, Tom from Ambrosia Candles helped write the book as well.
So. That's right. Mm-hmm. And he's been helping us with our Patreon.
Yeah, so if you're a Patreon member, you may have received some candles from us that were from his... farm, his
apiary.
Apiary, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, that's the word he's looking for. And we also have a good friend that we met here at the conference that we wanted to bring onto the show to talk a little bit about homesteading, a little bit about what it means to be a homesteader, what it means to cultivate the land, like the duty that a man has to the land and what he does not maybe have the duty to the land. Joel, it's great to have you. You are with Faith Family Farm, which I loved your story today. You gave a talk or a presentation actually yesterday, I guess, on like the name of your farm and a tribute to your dad, which I thought was just beautiful. Faith Family Farm is where you go. Faith Family Farm home, faithfamilyfarmstead.com is where you go to find more information. But Joel, it's great to have you on. Thank you so much for hanging out with us.
Hey, thanks so much for having me here. This is great. Thank you so much, Adam. This is awesome.
Yeah, and plus you brought some wine with us.
That's right. A little bit of a terroir, a little taste of the land, of the farm. So we have a farm. We're trying to grow some nutrient-dense food, by having the nutrient-dense soil. And of course, that's going to come out in the wine, the syrups, everything that we grow. And so to me, it's all about building up that Catholic culture and bringing people together to be able to celebrate what God's doing in the movement and be able to enjoy the fruit of the land. So thanks for having me. Yeah.
You know, I find that culture is most fully expressed in cultures.
Yes.
Like the soil is in fact a culture. You can't make wine without culture, more of a scientific term, culture, you know?
Yes.
So there's a reason why the terms are synonymous and because when you have a real culture, you end up making things like wine and beer and growing and having good food.
And that's what we're trying to bring back in the whole, homesteading movement, the guild that we're a part of and everything is bringing back an artisanal, authentic work back to our, basically to revitalize Christian culture and bring it back. And it really is, as you guys are aware, in the present day lack of culture that we have, it's swimming upstream, right? We're going countercultural. We're deciding to work hard, to sacrifice. But in doing so, yes, it might be a hard life, but it's a good life. And in this, you're able to truly celebrate because you know what went into that that drink or that, sausage. We've got prosciutto here. We've got a little bit of, again, a lot of stuff we can try here and just kind of enjoy some brotherhood together.
So we've got a few things here
that
are from your farms. What should we start with?
Let's start, the first one here in line, we'll just do a strawberry wine.
Okay.
So this has a really cool story behind it. So
cheers.
So like strawberries are something that, easy to grow.
So a lot. Yeah. And actually a very interesting thing about community and bringing people together with this wine we've had.
That's good.
I mean, turned out. But this is actually from a neighboring farm of ours who we had a big storm back in May and they had all these strawberries in the freezer. The freezer went down, but for only like 10 hours. So they just started to thaw and then they refroze. Okay. So they were still fine, but couldn't be resold or whatever. So he said, Joel, would you like to go ahead and do something with the Homestead Guild? And we're like, okay, this is perfect. We'll call it. It was my birthday. You know, use an birthday excuse, right? So we called it Joel's Jam and Jamboree. And we did. We were like, the whole idea of making jam, getting together. Everyone brought their, you know, musical instruments and everything. Had a big party. But the idea there is, we processed like 500 gallons of strawberries, wow. right? And made like 160 some gallons of juice, and then, you know, disseminated that out to the people who came and just, hey, see what you can make with it. Jams, jellies, and of course wine, you know. So the theme for this year, if you might, you know, strawberry, a lot of strawberry.
Nice. Now, so you have what's called, now correct me if I'm wrong, because this is all new to me, but you have an experimental farm. Is this correct? Is this yes. like what you call this?
Yeah. So our mantra is basically that we have an 85-acre beyond organic permaculture farm where we're an educational experimental farm, but we're primarily trying to raise like soil. We're raising, basically growing soil to create nutrient dense soil that will then create nutrient dense food. And when you have nutrient dense soil, it comes out in the food, it comes out in the bottle. And so that's where the whole concept of like food is medicine comes from. And that's what my passion is on, is, you know, trying to help people care for the earth, care for people, you know, and anything that I do. So it's definitely a passion project.
You know, so our listeners, they know 2 years ago, changed mm-hmm. my life, decided to buy 5 acres, not a whole lot of land, but plenty, mm-hmm. plenty to do a lot of things with. Mm-hmm. And it, since then, my eyes have just been totally opened about how all yield, all harvest, no matter what you're doing, whether you're raising animals or growing crops, it all is dependent on soil.
Yeah.
Soil and sunlight. You can't, mm-hmm. you actually can't raise animals mm-hmm. if you don't have good soil.
Yes.
Because you need yep. grass, grain, something.
Yep. And it's about putting an investment into it. Think of it like if you're a soil farmer, basically, if that's, because people ask, well, what do you farm? And it's like, what don't I farm, right? It's either one of two answers. Like, it's pretty much anything, because we're kind of, like you say, experimental, educational. We want to try everything that'll work in this zone 7B around the Charlotte area. But if you really want to pinpoint it to the one thing, it's that I am a soil farmer. Because then once you do that, then that like, as you said, it feeds everything else. So it's kind of like an investment. You know, you put a dime in, you get a dollar out. And by creating an abundant life in the soil with the microbes and the fungi and everything, and you orchestrate that, you're basically just farming in God's image. And by that, having that network, that underground life, then all of a sudden, you know, we feel better by the things we eat.
Shocker,
right? Yeah. It's like right. all of a sudden, you know, our health costs go down, you know,
right.
shocker. All yeah. these things like, you know, it's amazing how God works that way, right?
Yeah, no doubt. So what is the crazy, like, I think that'd be a lot of fun to have like experimental, but it'd be like kind of creative, because you get to basically like kind of, you probably study what everybody doing around the world, like yep. what's worked out. Like right. I really appreciated in your talk, you talked about how the Germans, I don't remember what it was called, but where they basically laid down trees
yeah.
like in the ground. What is it called? What was it called?
Hugelkultur.
Hugelkultur.
It's a good German word. Yeah, the idea. And that was actually found almost by accident, by something they'd done. At least that's the story, you know, so it goes. That some logs were basically laid down, and then they, you know, had soil that was pushed over the top, and that they noticed over the years that the trees and the plants that grew in that area were just much more vibrant and alive than elsewhere. And of course, lo and behold, we find out that when you think about it, when you have rotting logs, you know, that's, they really act as like a 20-year irrigation and fertilization, because as they're rotting, they're taking up the moisture, just like a paper towel would, you know, mm-hmm. logs, wood, paper, soaks it up and then gives it off to your plants. And then as it's rotting, it's taking the nutrients from that, and you're turning those logs like into vegetables or something. I mean, that's just yeah. wild.
Like, and like it creates this irrigation, you know, yes. the north and the south yes. areas, because there's a lump there, right?
That's
there's,
right. The microclimates.
Yeah. Microclimates, which I thought was really cool. I wouldn't have thought it. So you get to experiment with all these kind of things. What's the craziest thing that you've done that you were like, whether it worked or not, it doesn't matter. Like, but what was the craziest thing you were like, I'm going to try this. Don't know if it's going to work.
Oh man, I'd say that's like every day. That's every day. I mean, there's so many things. Like I've tried making ponds a little too high on the hill, and so it didn't work. Or like they're, you know, I've done. I'd say one of the things, I mean, I tried pheasants, you know, ring neck pheasants. And they worked for about 6 months, you know, but we just don't have the things in the, you know, that they have out,
in Kansas.
Yeah. And can't, they don't, we don't have the minerals to be able to get them to like self-sustain and everything. And, but basically, well, yeah. So I've tried a little bit of anything. And so if you name it, pretty much name it. Okay. Well, I've tried that and tell you, okay, it worked, didn't work. But yeah, so a lot of different things.
So let me ask you about what we were trying here, this strawberry wine, because strawberries are something that almost anybody can grow. How many strawberries do you know, approximately, like how many to make a bottle of this wine?
Oh, I don't know.
Would you have to have 100?
Well, of course, the difference for every strawberry, you can have one strawberry that is 10 strawberries. You know, it all depends on the variety and everything that you have. So that's a very big, it depends. I know that 500 gallons of berries basically made about 160 some gallons, 68 gallons of juice. You know, and so if you've got, you know, that, then, okay, 5 gallon batch, or we're doing a 6 gallon batch.
Five to one berry to
juice ratio. Yeah.
Depending on the strawberries.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Just because, you know, like that could be something anybody
could do.
If you have a tiny piece of yard.
Yes.
You might say, hey, let's grow
a
bunch of strawberries and,
and
make something.
Yes. Well, I think the one of the biggest key concepts, I mean, in permaculture and homesteading is this idea of you can farm. You know, as Joel Salatin would say, you can farm. It's this concept of we want a positive thing. Even if you're in, you know, Manhattan on a balcony, you can grow a tomato plant.
Men, do you feel stuck in old idols or burdened by the pharaohs of our time? Do you know that you're capable of so much more than you are giving today? Exodus 90 is the number one freedom app to help you become the man you were created to be. Exodus 90 is a powerful 90-day journey to freedom in Jesus Christ, and it starts on January 20th. Download the Exodus 90 app today to join tens of thousands of men from all around the world. We begin January 20th. Join us.
Or you can even just be a producer of something, even if it's just making a painting in your house. The idea is we just want to get away from that constant consumerist mentality. And so for people who are on small acreages, it's funny, I can almost get jealous of that because of the idea of being able to focus, you know, with 85 acres, it's like, I can be like a bee on one thing and then off and never not be back. And next thing you know, I don't get a harvest from that because, oh, I didn't actually have time to take care of it. Or, you know, so there's a lot you can do on small acreage. Mm-hmm. And that's what we started out on. We started out at 0.3 acres there in Gastonia, North Carolina. And we did farm tours on 0.3 acres in the middle of subdivisions, you know, having the kids and stuff out. And they're like, we didn't think we're on a farm. It's like, yeah, because you can farm anywhere. And like we were doing 90% of our veg, you know, we weren't canning and stuff, but we're through the summer months, we're eating off the garden on a small acreage.
So what would you do? So because there's a lot of guys who are listening right now who live in suburbia, they only have, you know, 0.3 acres or, you know, or less.
Even if you have less than that, like, okay,
well, what do I,
you can do a lot. The point
you
is
can
like,
do, yeah.
Carve out 200 square feet or 100 square feet.
Yes.
And you can do it. It's amazing what you can do.
You can do something. And even if you don't have, if even in the garage, you could go ahead and raise, you know, quail. They're very quick, or rabbits, you know, in terms of meat, quick turnaround. You can do like all sorts of different things. It's about getting like creative. And the idea is just to, rather than, we just have to keep building that virtue and keep trying and looking at creative ways. Not to be a naysayer, you know, it's like, let's find what we can do.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, I always think, look at what you buy at the store.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Grow it, you know, and even, you know, it's like in the beginning, you're not going to totally replace buying lettuce.
Yeah.
But that's okay. You can have one, maybe two or three meals where, hey, this salad today at this meal, this is from our backyard. And because the thing is, I remember that first meal for me. In just living in a neighborhood, having planted a garden, you know, little raised garden bed in the back, you know, I was real proud of my small raised garden bed, and for good reason. And remember the first time we had a salad that came out of that little piece of earth in the backyard of our neighbor, you know, in our backyard. And that was a very good feeling.
That's amazing. There's a sense where, and how much you know, lettuce you can grow in a small area.
Yeah.
I mean, we're doing on 4x8 beds, you know, getting 3 cuttings off of our lettuce, and it's, I mean, we're feeding family, you know, a 5, and it's massive bowls.
Yeah.
For days and days on end, and then cut and come again.
You can actually get
a ton. I overwhelmed.
Over your skis.
Yes.
We're to the point where, like, we got to the point where it's like, look, you can come and visit, but you have
to take
lettuce
some. With yeah, exactly.
And I mean, like, exactly. A pound of lettuce.
That's right.
It's a lot.
That's right. But that's in the South here, which, by the way, welcome to North Carolina in terms of this is, yeah, you know,
this is a lot of fun.
This is a place to be. And you know, for your viewers, and they say what, you know, NC stands for is nothing compares, a little bit of, you know, and see okay. Now the all idea right. Of, you know, okay, we don't have the cold of the North, the heat of the South. We've got the mountains, we've got the beach. We've got a very, very, very Catholic community, people who look out for each other. We've got the guild. I tell you, that's right. And speaking of this area,
I haven't met anybody here with the, you know, North or South Carolina traditional accent.
Yeah. We know how to turn it on.
Okay.
Right. Back in the mountains, you got to be careful out there. Out there, you know, you got to go ahead and lock your doors and go to church. You know why, right? You lock your doors, you know, your car doors at church, because if you don't, then you're going to get everyone else's produce they put in your car. It's like, you're going to, I got Betty Zucchini. Just have to know when to turn it on.
Gotcha. There you go. That's awesome. Yeah, no, it's great. It is great to be here. So I'm curious what your thoughts are. Because we live in this consumer mentality, there's a lot of isms in this world that, you know, that we're just the modernism, the consumerism that we have to battle as Catholic men. And what is the relationship of soil to the combating modernism or combating the consumerism mentality? Is there a relationship between that? And if there is, like, does it have to do with the work? Does it have to do with the sacrifice, the feast? Like, what is it?
Well, it's all of the above, first of all. I mean, and the aspect of, you know, to combat, you know, the modernist and consumerist mentality, it starts with the soil. But when to have that takes work. So there's sacrifice in that. There's also a lot of patience, but then, because that takes time, you know. You know, just to get the bottle of, you know, elderberry syrup was like 5 years in the making, starting with the soil. But to do so, when you have that patience, that time, and you think of doing things in, you know, again, God's image, farming in God's image, then when you do work and, you know, take that bounty to the table, then that makes the flavor that much more tasting, right? The feast is much more grand. You know, just like this evening that we had, right? That beautiful feast. It means much more when you've gone through. So it's every step of the way is about, you know, swimming counterculturally, about trying to bring back the family and bring back virtue into the family and raising people up to go against the grain. But not to be, you know, preppers or tin hat and going against like, oh, Armageddon. That's not the point.
Yeah. I'm so glad you brought that up, Joel.
Yeah.
Like if you'd asked me like 10 years ago, I'd have been like, okay, I'm not a hippie. You know, right, exactly. That's just not who I am. You know, like,
and that's more of the concept of retreating from, right. But that's not what Catholicism is all about. What we're trying to do in Catholicism, and especially the homesteading movement is producing a positive, right. We're actually creating a positive, not retreating from a negative.
Right.
So that, you know, it's like Jack Spirko, you'd always say, you know, we try to, you know, help you live a better life if times get tough or even if they don't. Mm-hmm. So regardless of whether or not the grocery stores are filled or not, we still want to farm. We still want to homestead. We still want to grow nutrient dense food. So it's for more than one reason. It's not, you know, would people call us preppers? Yeah, some might, but certainly no. And I'm not, and we want to dispel that myth that, you know, really homesteading is about taking back. It's a very traditional Catholic. It's ours. We should own it. It's not just the pagan hippies, you know, you right. think of, yeah.
Yeah. So I think you're exactly right. There are all these analogies between just what you do this, because we're talking about sort of an ancient, just everyday natural, like this is part of the natural order of life, was the production, produce, the fruitfulness of the things that you would do. And so I have another follow-up question for that. But first, I want you to answer, what is, because you're about, you're like, permaculture is one of your mm-hmm. of your big things. What is permaculture?
Oh, great question. Yeah. Should start about, out with that.
That's all good. That's all good. Yeah. So permaculture, kind of an easy way to break it down is think of it as a permanent perma culture, or sometimes known as permanent agriculture. So permanent culture, permanent agriculture. The concept here is that we want to work with creation, right, to create basically integrated ecosystems that work and become more productive over time with less inputs. Now, that might sound too good to be true when you think, wait, less work, but it means that we're trying to passively, for example, capture water via swales that then over time, you know, will passively irrigate landscapes. Think of Jeff Lawton and the greening up the deserts and things he've done. Hugo culture is a great example of that. So permaculture is just an overarching theme or a system, a philosophy of thought, you know. So it's not just agriculture per se. Mm-hmm. It also is about just a way of organizing your life.
Would you say it's less human inputs? Certainly, because you want to keep capturing
exactly
some of these inputs, but just less of you.
Yeah,
less of your work.
Having to work. Yeah, exactly.
You establish something that will collect the water for you, or you know, keep distributing nutrients over.
Almost self-sufficient.
Yeah, and to think of like a food forest and everything, and don't I wouldn't confuse it with this aspect of like, okay, well, we're just going to be a sloth later and get lazy. It's not that. There's we live post fall, right? So there's always going to be work, right? But still, this concept is. We don't want to have, for lack of a better term, and not to step on your toes, but this idea of, I believe it's a Protestant kind of notion, this overemphasis of Genesis that might makes right, and that we can impose our will on it, on the land, to subdue it by using these, you know, huge tractors and tons of chemical fertilizers and monocrop and everything, and just say, this is what it's going to do. That's not, you know, that's not obviously pro-earth, pro-people. We want to get away from that to create something of a more permanent ecological system that's going to be beneficial for us and the earth.
Sure.
So it's also a great movement when you think about it in terms of being able to relate to so many different people, right? Because yes, with people who are maybe the hippie types or whatever, they can be like, look, we love. Right, the same kind of things, but we just don't, for example, worship the tree.
Yeah,
you know, we're trying to show them and point them to the higher good of the whole, but that we don't want them to just, you know, become so narrow minded in on it that they're worshiping, you know, the creation rather than the creator. It's about having things in proper order.
Yeah, you know, it really makes me think about when you establish a virtue, like when a man creates a virtue. What are the effects on his soul, right? That mm-hmm. virtue is this habitual thing, almost like you've now created this permanent part of you, who you are. It's not going to last forever if you don't continue to have, you know, this...
Nurture it.
Nurture, yeah, exactly. But you have created almost like this permaculture on your soul mm-hmm. by growing in virtue, which will create inevitably more fruitfulness. You know, it will, you know, when you plant that log in the ground or when you create that swale to capture the water, it's going to just create fruitfulness all around it.
Yes.
And how just God has ordered all of creation to be this mirror back at us so that we might see the way he works. And it's like it happens inside of us, but he wanted to make sure we knew that.
That's
and
right.
He put it outside of, you know, it's, yes. He just can't help himself.
That's right.
You know, does it everywhere.
Yes. Yeah. And it's an overabundance, you know, that he shows us, yes, we're building virtue in our soul by working our hands in the soil.
Adam, I don't know about you, but I am getting tired of giving my hard-earned money to companies that are paying for things like abortions and worse.
I know, man, the stuff that they're teaching our kids in school, that anti-Catholic bigotry, it's getting crazy what they're pushing on them. I really just would like to spend money without having to worry about supporting these type of people.
You know, that's where Catholic Owned comes in. Finally, we have a way to shop with businesses that share all of our values.
Wait, hold on. What exactly is Catholic Owned?
Oh, it's the app to find tons of authentically Catholic-owned businesses from across the country and finally feel good about where your money goes. They've got national and local companies, goods and services, and they're adding more every day.
Man, I gotta check this out. Where can I find them?
You can download the free Catholic-owned app today and join us in building the new Catholic economy. Just use referral code CATHOLICMAN at sign up.
You know, and that in it, it, that it takes time, that this notion that we have to, we have to get away from the modernist tendency to think that we can just outsmart and outthink our way through everything, that we'll come up with the new drug or the new this and new that. Because I think one of the most powerful things that we can have is being humble stewards of God's creation. And an example could be, for example, when I saw that, you know, 1 square foot of soil where we had, you know, a cover crop that was growing and a bumblebee coming down here and seeing, you know, the interaction of the earthworm pulling in, you know, a piece of straw into the ground and then bugs eating bugs. And there's so many interactions going on in that 1 square foot of soil that it would take multiple PhDs and then some to try to describe and understand that. But that's like, I mean, to me, when I saw that, and I'm just taking this time of prayer and in silence out in God's creation, I mean, it literally brought me to tears, right? To think that how complicated and interacting all these things are, and that I could never begin to understand everything, but God does. Mm-hmm. And what does he ask us to do? Just be humble stewards, just mirror his creation. So all I do is plant the seed, and he knows how to orchestrate all that. And then, although I might not understand it all, if I eat the fruit of that, then all of a sudden my body, who he's made, can now function properly. Mm-hmm. And then our healthcare costs go down. Our chronic, our chronic diseases, go mm-hmm. down. All these things. So,
It's almost like trying to contemplate how many stars are in the sky. Yeah. It's similar to what's going on in the soil under your feet.
Yes.
You know, like it's that level of complexity.
Yeah.
If you knew all the microbes and things that are interacting and building on top of each other mm-hmm. in order to create just like the stuff we take for granted, just the grass that you mow and trample on and just the things that are required to make that happen, just mind blowing.
Exactly.
It seems like it's a lack of realism for today, right? It's mm-hmm. like we don't have that opportunity. So it seems like years ago, everybody had the opportunity to... by natural law, like develop these natural virtues within the farm, mm-hmm. to have listen, I have to be able to grow this food because my family needs the food, right? Yeah, like we have to, we depend on it. And so like we had these natural virtues that we were able to develop, like perseverance, the patience, mm-hmm. When we have abundance, the generosity to other people, because it's like, hey, I have too much. I will give this to you as neighbor, like then naturally bartering happens and things like it seems like that back then we had being able to cultivate your land also provided us the opportunity to cultivate natural virtues, which gave us the base foundation, obviously, to build up to supernatural virtues. So do you feel like that today we lack that gift, basically, of working on the land to develop these natural virtues?
Yes, and it's been orchestrated and planned. That's the thing that's scary about this. I mean, this is like the devil's at work here, so to speak, in terms of wanting to divide and conquer. And in that natural virtue that you're referring to back when everyone was having, to work the land for depending upon it, then it meant that I needed you for the pig slaughter. I needed you for this and that, and you needed me. But that interdependence also meant that we were in real community and not fake, but on authentic connection, that where life and death were actually on the line. And when you have that kind of building, then you're just a happier, that's how God made us mm-hmm. to be in relation.
Right.
And so that naturally then builds virtue that then leads to the virtues ordered toward God. It's putting everything in proper order. And Satan's trying to divide, conquer, spread, it's the father of lies. It's infiltrated our whole culture. Mm. And so just to be normal makes us look weird now.
Yeah. Look at this weird guy. He's normal.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Actually, this is historically the norm. You know,
like, I'm not weird. You're weird.
Yeah, exactly. Who's weird? Yeah.
I'm normal. Yeah. You're not normal.
That's right.
So let's talk about maybe the burden of abundance. That seems like something that in today's world, you know, we always want, we want abundance. Like it seems like everything I want as many cars as possible, as many homes as possible, as much money as possible. Like I want abundance, abundance, abundance. But then when you realize when you're cultivating the land and you're trying your best, you know, to till and to care for the land that the Lord has entrusted you to, you start realizing that you can easily have too much. And what is the repercussions of that? What happens whenever there's a burden of abundance?
Well, part of permaculture and the three, you know, ethics is, you know, earth care, people care, return of surplus. So in terms of any surplus, we're creating regenerative systems that go back, you know, so there's no waste. It's a cycle. But when you speak of the abundance in the first part about the aspect of more cars, more stuff, right? Our culture is like selling us that lie. But the more things we get, do we find that that's truly what makes us happy? No, because then in the end, those things own us rather than us own them. Mm. Because they break, they need upkeep, they need this. Rather, what we're made for is relation, you know, so it's the culture's kind of got it all backwards. But with the abundance of, for example, with your lettuce bed, you know, God is an abundant giver. He's a generous lover. So he outpours himself. And so one thing we can get to know a little bit of the nature of God is just by sticking a seed in the soil, right? And then you get to know more about the creator through his creation. And when you see that overabundance that outflows, you can't help but be like, here, have some lettuce, you know, have this. And that overabundance of food, you know, that we can then help a neighbor allows us to, again, build community and then help and barter and creates truly an economy, right? So we're even working on that, creating a small like Catholic economy in a way, of helping each other, their own entrepreneurial businesses and, things that are, opposite of what, you know, the government wants us to do, you know, be a cog in the wheel, be this, that, or whatever, you know, we're able to.
It is an interesting observation that artifacts or things made by man, we lack often the ability to know what is enough. Mm. We constantly want more because they don't satisfy us. Mm-hmm. Money cannot satisfy you. But if you compare that to the things of God's creation, the idea of what is enough, it gets flipped on its head, and we all of a sudden now we're thinking in terms of abundance, okay, and of surplus. You know, we just don't think about money in terms of surplus. And this is true of all of man-made things, the things we mentioned, cars, luxury items, you name it. But if we think about, all of a sudden, it's totally flipped around when we're talking about the natural gifts, you know, just part of creation. Now it's abundance.
And not only that, but think of it also in just of our food system. Because if you have an adulterated food system where whenever you have an abundance of, let's say, obesity, right, is a huge issue. Well, what happens, it's because you're eating horrible food, right, that doesn't have the good nutrient density to it. And so we create this problem, the overabundance of too many carbs, too much food of that. It's too much poor quality food. We don't get satiated. We overeat. We feel lethargic. It's not because they're lazy as a culture. In general, it's because we are what we eat, and we're eating this stuff that has been manufactured, has the drugs, has the chemical, all the stuff in it that's not healthy for our bodies. And so whenever you actually eat the nutrient-dense food, all of a sudden you notice, I'm actually full. I'm satiated. Yeah. I don't need to keep eating. So you don't overeat as much. And then you consider the cultural overabundance, what does that lead to? Right. Well, in our healthcare, I can't help, you know, put on the doctor hat a little bit.
Okay, cause you're also a dentist, right?
On the side.
Yeah. We didn't even mention it. I'm terrible about introducing you. I apologize, but yeah, you're also a dentist on the side.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but this is
whatever that means.
Yeah. Just, yeah. But it's just this idea though, that, I mean, I've been through a lot of learning what through lobbying in DC and being part of Farm Bureau and you know, being involved in all of these things, in understanding our culture and the whole, you know, what we are as a consumerist culture. And it's hard not to see that one of the greatest problems in our healthcare system is, we know the problems of Big Pharma, we know all that stuff, but one of the biggest problems, if you want to really break it down, it's simple. It's chronic inflammatory disease.
You good?
I'm good. Well, I have a little more of this.
Throw that right there.
I like it. Thank you.
Yeah.
But it's just chronic inflammatory disease. So what is that? If you break it down, chronic over time, right? Mm-hmm. Inflammatory. That's your body saying, I'm not used to this. What is this? You know, inflaming, creating walls of plaque around things, right? Saying this is not, so that's, if you get genetically modified, you know, things that your body's not used to digesting, you know, it hasn't evolutionarily or whatever had a time to adapt to these new foods that are foreign microbiologically to our systems, right? Then they're going to reject, you know, inflammation, right? And then of course, disease, lack of health. So that includes everything from heart attacks, IBS, you know, arthritis, all these things. So if you consider that 90% of our healthcare costs are in chronic inflammatory disease, and you consider what that is, then you realize, oh, the solution to all these problems in our society can come back to a similar answer. And it's not that we have to have multiple PhDs to know it. Mm-hmm. We just have to be humble stewards of God's creation.
I think that's beautiful. I think that actually, like if we actually thought about that on a day-to-day basis, it would solve a lot of problems, right?
Right. It's mm-hmm. like, I don't know that it's like necessarily be the some like miracle cure that like, oh, you're...
No, yeah, not like that.
But...
It's definitely going to help.
The thing is, mm-hmm. we don't even realize this mask that we've, you know, maybe lived with our whole life about what does it mean to feel healthy has not experienced. Just because
we used to eat margarine and like the thought mm-hmm. that was better than butter for years. Yes. You know, it's like one molecule away from plastic.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Do you feel like God is calling you to go on a pilgrimage? Well, for the last 34 years, Select International Tours has been leading pilgrimages to holy sites all over the world.
And you want, when you go on pilgrimages, Dave, you want to make sure you have the best hotels, you're touring with the best guides, and every detail has been addressed.
And that's exactly what you're getting with Select International Tours. So, for more information, go to their brand new website, selectinternationaltours.com. They have been a sponsor of the Catholic Man Show for a long time now. Even during the COVID pandemic, they were still sponsoring our show. A lot of other tour companies were really shutting down. These guys were consistent. So go to selectinternationaltours.com to find out more information about all the great pilgrimages they offer all over the world. Yeah, like for Adam and I, growing up in the 80s, things were convenient. And like this, the whole idea of like
fast food
pyramid, mm-hmm. you know, was this new, and that's all we knew, you know.
It's turned upside down.
Yeah, right. And it turns out totally wrong. And
yes.
Praise God, we're moving, seems like, away from
there, from that.
Yeah. People are becoming aware of, hey, I don't think this is actually the best for me. Lego my ego.
Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
maybe that's not a great breakfast.
Yeah, maybe not.
I love waffles.
Yes. Okay?
Yeah. The second part. So at the very beginning, I introduced you with faith, family, farm, right?
Yes.
And so the second part of that is family. And so this is what I really love, and I've come to love. You know, I'm very new to homesteading. I'm not even technically, I guess, homesteading, but I have land and I desire.
You're doing it.
I just started. But it creates natural abilities to be together as a family. So maybe touch on like what have you learned thus far from a dad perspective, from a husband perspective of having this land, of cultivating the land, of having a farm?
Well, it brings people together and it brings the family, most importantly, together. It helps protect the nuclear family. And that's, as you made a beautiful point, there's not going to be one like magic bullet, but the whole concept is that if you start with basic foundational ordered principles, mm-hmm. right? Not that it all has to be like, oh, it's all from the soil. No, but by starting somewhere, starting there, then by cultivating the soil together, for example, with your family, well, now you're beyond having nutrient dense food. Now you're into, as we've spoken, relationship. You're into having a wonderful marriage. You know, you're into having wonderful relationship with your kids because they see you working and you're working together with them. And they understand now, you know, it goes into education because now they can know adding and subtracting by, you know, working land and how many carrots and selling this at a farm stand or something. So everything, it's like a ripple effect, mm-hmm. right? And so it's not just that the soil is the answer or anything, but to go back and the roots of where that came from in terms of family is that my dad, he was an incredible example, very Catholic, take us to church every Sunday. And he lived by the values of faith, family, and farm in that order. And so if you have in that proper order, he would always say, then things will be right. Faith, family, farm. And he was a big role model to me. I always looked up to him. I wanted to always be spending time with him, my best friend. And unfortunately, he died in a car accident that I was in with him the day before Christmas Eve of 1999. And I was just 16. He was only 47. So I held his hand on the side of the road as he died. And it was obviously, I mean, horrible, you know, mm-hmm. Basically had a bad dream and pulled the wheel. It was so tough, but I remember that even up before the week before he died, I said, Dad, you know, you can't die. You know, you can't die. Like after finally pestering him long enough, he's like, oh, okay, I won't die. I don't die. And they did. But he said, Joel, if you want to be a farmer, he said, you have to be a doctor first. You know, because we didn't have, you know, family land to inherit to, you know, make that happen, to be the farm. So I use that, as an impetus to want to make like dad proud, mm-hmm. you know? Sure. And then it got you, you know, it gets you questioning as a 16-year-old, what's life all about and the shortness of life and everything. And so I was like, this is heaven's the most important thing, faith. Right. And so that led me to discern going into seminary. So I went to seminary to discern the priesthood. I also realized I need to take some time away to pray quiet by myself. And so that led me, you know, I knew my dad had always wanted to hike the Appalachian Trail. He wanted to go from Georgia to Maine, you know, so like I hiked the Appalachian Trail in memory of him with his old pack, you know, getting a chance to step away and then spread the faith there on the trail, all these things. So it's like this, the adventures came from that and from wanting to, you know, make dad proud and realizing like, this is what it's going to take to do so. And he's been with me all along, the whole way.
You might be the only guy in dental school when asked, like, why do you want to be a dentist? To say, well, because I want to be a farmer.
Yeah, that's right. I was the black sheep. Yeah, I was the black sheep at dental school there because they're like, we just don't understand you,
Maybe
Joel.
You misunderstood my
question.
Yeah,
exactly. That's right. And don't get me wrong. Like, I got specifically into, you know, the dental field because of love of helping people. Right. Sure. And so I would go out and like, I love doing dental missions. And that also was kind of like, okay, if I'm not called to be a diocesan priest, I thought maybe it meant to be a mission priest. And so I was in Honduras and Haiti and Mexico, doing a lot of mission work, a lot of solo work, some with church and everything. But it was in that journey. It's kind of a long story, but in that journey that it's like, well, I'm not being called to be a missionary priest, but I see the need for dentists and healthcare and how can I provide for our family? It all came back to dad saying, okay, be a doc. Okay. So that's how I, went back to Chapel Hill and finished dental school there in Chapel Hill.
So there's another thing here in front of us I want to ask you about.
Yes.
What is this that you poured for us as well?
I already drank some.
Yeah, he's like, that's some.
It's delicious.
It's delicious.
Yeah, elderberry.
Yes.
So, okay, because my wife makes elderberry syrup, mm-hmm. but it's like more of a medicine. Okay. It's like good. It's yeah, no, just, I mean, it's, yeah. it's good,
yeah.
but it's not,
but it's not like this.
I'm not going to like pour a glass of,
yeah.
not like this. Yeah. This is like got cinnamon.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like,
yeah.
This first of all, it reminds me of like a very Christmassy.
Yes. Drink. Yeah. It's a good Christmassy kind of drink. Now we, it's not something you drink in, you know, I made a tablespoon a day. It still is kind of that health benefit kind of a, you know, tonic in terms of any
more of this kind of help.
He's like, I'll have this.
This is fantastic.
I'll have this. Pour me another, sir. Yeah.
For my health.
Yes, exactly. To your health.
Glass of health, please.
Yes, that's right. But yeah, no, this is all made off of the, you know, off of the organic elderberries from our farm, local raw honey. the organic Ceylon cinnamon, organic clove, even the ginger in this is mulch grown at one of our sister farms in South Florida. So we try to be as authentic as possible. That's why it took like 6 years to be able to go to market with this.
Well,
so
I'm really glad,
patience.
Yeah. Really glad to have some patience.
But elderberries is one thing that's very, at least, okay, I should say this, in our area, in our zone, mm-hmm. elderberries are very easy to grow.
Yes.
And they're like, yeah. it's, you can put one
like
little
weed,
shoot in and it just takes off.
Yep. We used to grow some mm-hmm. when we lived in this neighborhood. Adam and I used to live across the street from each other.
Yeah. Yep.
And so we had some in our backyard until we realized the park, which if you walked out my backyard, we backed up to this park. We walked out there and they're just growing in this like briar wild. It was just like covered with elderberries. It's like, well, I guess we'll stop growing this in our tiny yard.
Yeah. If you've got tons of it right here.
Like, we'll just... This
overabundance.
Is kind of like, yeah, for the anybody to just have, I guess.
That's right.
Park is,
but it's really great for you. It's very, very easy to do.
Easy to grow. Yeah. And that's the whole point. Part of the other thing in permaculture is like, what kind of species are you going to, you know, produce? What do you want to grow? Well, yes, what you eat, but also what grows well in your area. That's just God telling you, mm-hmm. you know, let's be smart yeah. here, you know. If a chicken's a jungle fowl, okay, create a little jungle for it then, you know, give it its proper habitat and it will thrive yeah. to allow it to live in accord with its nature. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, elderberry is an easy one. We're doing a lot of, you know, pawpaw, persimmon, a lot of real hardy apples. Mm-hmm. We do peaches too, but they're, you know, less disease resistant. But yeah, the persimmons, pawpaws, they do amazing. Of course, in South Florida, we've got, you know, my father-in-law's doing the mangoes and the bananas and some citrus a little bit, but yeah.
Nice.
It's great.
Can you talk to me about the conversations you had to have with your wife to get on board, like in the duties and responsibilities? Because obviously to do this, you have to be very in relationship with your wife and on the same page. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, she's the one that upholds everything. She's the harder worker of the two as far as that, because she's, you know, homeschooling the kids. We have three wonderful daughters, you know, under nine, so hands full there, but mm-hmm. Yeah, it's exciting. And they're helping me. When I've shared this vision and this idea of like with my dad and everything that we had, she was completely on board. She wanted this. She loves the idea of homesteading, getting out there. She's not necessarily going to be the one all out in the gardens all the time. She can do amazing stuff in the kitchen and value adding and all that. So it creates a teamwork. You know, we're a team together, and she's very, very much looking at it from the health perspective, mm-hmm. especially what she's going to feed her family. Mm-hmm. So as most moms are, right? They're the ones who buy the food, right? So it's great to be able to have those different roles that are complementary. Like, yes, I can provide that. Here's meat on the table. Yeah, you know, literally meat. Like, we don't have to go to the store. This is just go cut out all the middlemen.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
You're literally cutting out the middleman.
I'm so
glad you said that. That's one thing that I've wanted to talk about. Like, I don't know, do a podcast. Really, I've been hoping somebody else would do a podcast about it, because our show, The Catholic Man Show, is not exactly about homesteading, even though it's like we talk a lot about it more these days. But the homestead wife. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like Adam, your question about just having growing this idea of like using the land, like capturing the fruitfulness of the land just around you, the just the thing that happens in a marriage, how dependent you become on one another. In modern life, husband and wife simply do not need each other the way, you know, 100 years ago and beyond. A husband and a wife literally depended on each other, mm-hmm. right? It seems like a long time ago, but if you, like, we read the Little House series
yes.
with our kids, just a wonderful book series for kids. You know, and it's like Ma is there making all the clothes. She's mm-hmm. doing all the cooking. She's just like working. It's like you, because you need something to wear. You need clothes. And obviously like, The husband at the time, he's not going to be able to make clothes and handle the livestock and plant the fields. And right, husband, the idea of like leaving your wife was ridiculous threat. He's like, what, are you going to die? Mm-hmm. You know? And to, so today, when you look at a marriage, that dependency on each other is just totally gone. Okay. So once you start growing things and, you know, like my wife and I, you know, it's, I think it's pretty common. Sounds like you and your wife, I kind of do the outside stuff and she does the inside stuff. But I realized very quickly, like, I'll bring this box of pears inside and feeling like, oh man, I worked really hard. And then I see like the things that she has to do for these pears not to go to waste. And I realize like, oh, honey, I should have communicated more with you that I was about to bring a huge box of pears in.
Yeah.
Like maybe actually I should have left them on the tree because you were not ready. Yeah. I thought you were going to be so excited, yeah. You know, and then
communication.
You know, it was just, yeah. Like, yeah. But it, in the end, it's so good. It's been such a blessing for our marriage. The fruitfulness in, you know, it just, that's the thing about fruitfulness is that it spreads to everything it touches, you know, and our marriage is objectively better. Isn't it? We had a great marriage before, but there's just so much more because of these great things and that we're doing that we have. And you don't have to go and buy land. You, I mean, you can, these are just basic things that you can be intentional about wherever you are. Like even, you have a apartment in New York City. Well, get a pot and put it on your balcony and put something in it.
Something. Yeah.
You know,
and this is the thing that like with families, we're with husbands and wives bringing back, it's about creating that more intentional, that authentic life together and needing each other. I think this idea we see is it's again, the father of lies trying to separate and break families apart. We see the, you know, the modern feminist movement that's trying to tell women, well, you don't need men, you know, go off and be, get this, you know, education, you know, don't be dependent. Does it make him happier? No. If you actually look into the heart of hearts, no, because the only recipe that we can have for our happiness is what God gives us, you know? So we have to follow that and keep that proper order of things. And then when we have that in order and we have that interdependency on each other, then all of a sudden, you know, our marriage is better. And that's conducive. It's not as though homesteading is going to solve that problem of any problems that would be there, but it would help. It just helps create an environment, you know, as we were saying earlier today about creating that family environment, you know, and then for things then to thrive.
It reminds me a little bit about fire. Fire is awesome. I'm a big fan.
Love it.
Always have been.
Trail name was Pyro for a while myself here. So yeah,
exactly.
I'll drink
to
that.
I have heating in my home like everybody. Okay. But when I light a fire in the fireplace, that natural heat, it's not cold, but all of a sudden the family is brought together surrounding this natural heat, right? And I'm not going to get rid of my heater. Okay. Because I like having a warm house, but I still light a fire every day if I can in the winter, simply because it's sort of like this whole idea about the fruitfulness of the land. Like, well, what is it, Adam? You know, you asked that question. What is it about this stuff that brings families together? Well, it's kind of like what brings families together around a fire. Your house is warm, but you have this natural fire heat,
brings people
and all of a sudden everybody's congregating around it. It's hard to say why and hard to say what it is about growing things, producing things. I mean, I think maybe some of it is like, you're more fulfilled. You have something to show for your efforts, which is becoming rare in our modern society where, you know, so much, we're so disconnected from the end result of our work because so much of it is on computers or digital or whatever. Right. There just has this effect like the fire.
Well, the fire is like almost the original television, you know, in terms of the fact that it's like mesmerizing. And the heat that you get from that is literally bottled sunlight, you know? So when you stand in the sun, you feel the rays that they kind of go through your body. You literally got that package in a very condensed form in the form of wood, you know, and we, like you, have a fire every day. All through the winter, like it's always
it's
going.
Awesome.
It's amazing.
Absolutely.
It's a place. Yeah.
Talk about how your prayer life has changed since you've had land or started this endeavor with homesteading.
The biggest difference is in the silence and in the patience and going out. Because when you're outside, and if you ever wonder, like, well, what am I doing? What's Joel doing on the homestead right now? Most likely, if you look at it a percentage of time, it's just that I'm out there alone, prayerfully contemplating, walking, and seeing and taking in. So that's prayer with God through his creation, that he's showing me things of his nature, clearing my head, getting outside, all the benefits that come from that. But also getting a sense more of him, again, learning about the creator through his creation. But that can only happen in the silence. Like this morning, we had the beautiful, mass in silence almost, it's like this sense of God comes to us in the silence. He's a lover that isn't wanting to push his way in. It's more of an invitation. And so to do so, just like in seminary, to discern properly, you have to step away from the noise of the world, to step into the silence, to listen. And so that being connected has very much helped, as well as just having a sense of place, like the Benedict, of a stability. We've forgotten what it means in our culture to have legacy. This is something that in other cultures, I was over there, Father Kauth, I think we were in Italy one of these times. They basically said, where did this picture, how long has this picture been on the wall in someone's house over there in Italy? I was in Italy like five times in 4 years or something in Rome. And they were like, well, what do you mean? Like, it's always been there. And like, what do you mean? No, like, a painting. And they're like, well, look. And we look behind her and the painting had been like on the wall on that whatever nail for like 1,000 years. I mean, it's like, no, they said, you Americans have no understanding. You have no understanding of legacy because you move from one place to another to another. And so that's why I really got fascinated with the sense of, well, how can we create legacy where we're at and have a sense of place? And that's why, for example, I think I planted another like 1,200 chestnut trees because of legacy. The chestnut orchards, I think in Italy, some are 1,000 years old, I believe, and still productive. This idea of trees that can be that long lived, like this, I'm planting for my great, 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 great grandkids. And I'm trying to create a succession plan to have them a place where they can call home and always be.
Yeah.
Now, doesn't mean it's going to work. No, I know I realize I'm American, but we need to plant the seeds and to create a place for that to be home, to create that legacy. And just like the fire that you have, that's a beautiful way to invite the children into prayer, because I always have my prayer chair next to the fireplace and looking at the Sacred Heart of Jesus. And of course, starting the day in prayer. And when you have little kids, as the faith is more caught than it is taught. And so by having, just my prayer chair there, I found that the kids, as they'd come downstairs, they'd know, don't disturb Daddy on his prayer chair. He's praying. But then I noticed they started grabbing chairs and then pulling them up to me and grabbing their little Bibles, because I'd, of course, be reading scripture and everything. And they'd grab their little, kid Bibles, and they would, replicate that. And so that's something that homesteading has very much affected in a positive way, the prayer life. So it's amazing. I think it's just planting seeds. I mean, think about it. The seed, we're planting seeds. Even at the local seminary, not, 15 minutes or so away from us, we're planting orchards. We're planting vineyards. And who's doing the work? We're putting in comfrey and all this stuff, creating food for us and ecosystems. The seminarians. Where they're actually teaching the seminarians how to grow sustainable and how to do permaculture. Why? Because we want them to know the people that they're going to be serving. Mm. Because when they go into Charlotte, Western North Carolina, a big proportion of their congregations are going to be homesteaders. So we don't want them to be foreign to the concept. We want them to get it. Even at our last Catholic Men's Guild meeting, this past week, we have about 50 men or so in the guild meeting every month or so. I mean, the priest was there, right? Going around, what do you need help with, Father, at your guild, at your homestead, kind of thing. It's like, well, I'm going to be starting a garden. It's like, this is beautiful. This is something that they should be involved in. Mm-hmm. I get too excited on this stuff. I just go off on tangents. Yeah. But yeah.
Well, Joel, I appreciate spending the time to talk with us today. This is the whole conference. Did we even mention where we are?
Yeah.
The Liturgy of the Lamb conference. Okay.
Yeah, at the very beginning.
I think I was in the microphone levels set when you were talking about that.
Yeah.
But I'm sure this conference will be happening next year. So like if this is something
Jason, at the very beginning. So when we were first pulling up, he's saying like, I'm so glad this is here. We're not going to do it next year. And then like he saw everybody here, like, you know, cause we had a great crowd, especially for the first year. People kept coming up to him and saying like, oh, next year we're going to bring so-and-so. We can't wait for next year. And so like right before dinner tonight, he was like, yeah, we're probably gonna have to do this next year. So Liturgy of the Land conference is probably going to be happening next year as well.
I like it.
Well, you know, it's a growing thing. So I'm sure.
Ba-da-tsh.
Yeah.
I love it.
Okay. Well,
you have to end with some homemade terroir, a little taste of the land.
Terroir.
Yeah, terroir, a little taste of the land. This is summer sausage.
Okay. Yeah, what is terroir?
It just means taste of the land.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is summer sausage from our farm. This is from the guild. People have made duck prosciutto, goose prosciutto, and then this is homemade summer sausage.
That is out of this world.
It's really, really good.
Mm.
Doesn't get any better, huh?
Mm. Joel, okay. So faithfamilyfarmstead.com is where they can go to find you. Anywhere else? Anything else you want to?
You need a part-time dentist. Dr. Stewart.
Sure. Yeah. Look us up. We'd be glad to take care of you. So, yeah, I love it. It's been an honor.
Treating roots of all kinds.
Yeah, that's right. Rooted connections, right?
Yeah.
We love it. Yeah. No, it's been an honor. I really appreciate you guys having me on. And anything I can do to help. That's my motivation, is to stay as well, like God will. Whatever we can do to help spread the movement and help encourage other people to get on board.
Yeah.
Go in the
Praise God.
Wars.
Thanks, Joel.
Cheers.
Cheers.